another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, your host today, along with our guest host, the Podfather, the original founding father of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, Jason Williams. How are
you, man?
What's
up, Burl? How you doing? Great to be here. Podfather.
You are the Podfather, man. When, you know, you're not the father of all podcasts, but you're the founding father of the That's So Cincinnati podcast.
It's crazy
you
to think,
and Paul
man.
Daner Jr.
How much? Ah, I've spent so many newsmakers come through this office, this studio.
So and, many newsmakers.
So many, and yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well,
as a host, co-host, and a listener.
There you go. Well, thanks for co-hosting. As you know, Sherry Coolidge signed off. Riding off into the sunset, taking on her new job. So we have an opening for a podcast host, co-host. For the short term, we're going to rotate through a very exciting list of guest hosts. So Jason, thanks for kicking off this era,
yeah.
This guest host era of the podcast.
Big shoes to fill just for this day.
With big Sherry. Fancy shoes to fill.
Big fancy shoes.
That like was stylish. Always- like high heels.
Always, it reminds me always the joke that Dan Horn and I, you know, Sherry, in order to, you know, she would introduce herself to people and, you know, Sherry's an incredible extrovert. And so she knew everyone. And Dan and I would always be like, we heard her one day literally say to someone, "Oh, I love your shoes." And so Dan and I took that and ran with it. And we always would joke with her and be like, "Love your shoes today."
She did have style. I mean, we mentioned
absolutely.
That, you know, not only is this institutional knowledge and experience
yeah.
of, you know, as a reporter, gone now for us.
Yeah.
So is Sherry's style. Like the style rating of the newsroom took a big hit.
Big time.
Big time.
So
I mean, you're not doing anything to help it.
No, I never. I've never been, you know, my grandfather owned a men's clothing store. If he saw me to this day, you know, God rest his soul. He died in 1998. But if he saw me, he would be like,
I think
he would disown me.
I bet you if he saw how most men dress for the office
big time
today,
oh.
He would be, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that era of like, I mean, I was looking at old pictures of people who were visiting Washington, D.C., like going there for like a summer visit.
Yeah.
And you got dressed up like to go places, like to go to the movies or to
yeah.
go out. You got dressed up to work for sure. Not anymore.
Exactly.
Not anymore. Well, with you being, you know, our first co-host and, you know, your finger on the pulse of so many things happening in town, there are a lot of news stories that we could talk about.
Ooh,
we could talk
yeah.
about the Hamilton County Growth Alliance trying to get people behind the idea of using the half-cent sales tax that funds the Reds and the Bengals stadiums for an arena. We could talk about that.
We could, and I have plenty of opinions on that. Yes.
I bet you do. We might have to have you back. I mean, we could talk about Sean Miller leaving Xavier.
We could, and I have plenty of opinions on that.
I know. But you know what, Jason? This is opening day week in Cincinnati, so we're going to talk baseball a little bit. In fact, our special
Let's
guest
go.
Today, I'm so excited, is going to be Chris Sabo.
Oh, yeah.
Former Reds third baseman. Member of the Reds Hall of Fame. He is going to be the Grand Marshal in the opening day parade. So we're going to have Chris Sabo as our guest today. But before we bring in Chris, you went to spring training
yeah.
as our sports columnist. How are you feeling about the team?
I'm feeling good. Really, you know, it's that young core group of guys that they've kept together and made that commitment. And it's funny to think, what was that? 2022, what, 3 years ago this month, they blew it all up. And that's when they traded Jesse Winker and Suarez and Sonny Gray.
Boy, that was a sad day for many Reds fans.
It was. And that, you know, and it was a hard day. And, you know, it was a hard day for the organization, for Mr. Castellini. And, but they had to make that decision to stay sustainable and to try to get to a place where they can sustained success. They're not there yet, but they're on the trajectory to being that. And obviously Terry Francona is, there's a lot of excitement about him. You could feel it. And I hate the word vibes, and I hate, you know, it's like, you can't, you know, I'm a journalist. So, you know, you want hardcore truth.
That's exactly. Not feelings, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I know I write with emotion, but, you know, it's all based in a genuine place and facts. And, but you know, it's hard not to just notice it when you were there and haven't been there. This was my third spring training since I've come back to sports, this go around with the Reds. You could just notice it. Like, and I can't say like, oh, this specific thing happened or that, be just general feel of it.
Is it the Francona factor?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, there, and you know, Gordon Whitmire's, he and I have talked about this. It was like, it was one of those times we debated whether I want to do a column on it. And he's like, hey, I want to do a story on it. And I was like, hey, go ahead and do the story on it. You know, and, but he's got a piece coming out on the Francona factor and really what does that mean and what kind of real digging down in the impact. Cause I think there's this, in some cases, there's a general feeling among maybe Reds fans, because all that word accountability got thrown around a lot last year with David Bell. And,
the general feeling that he did not, discipline is the wrong word.
Right.
I think accountability is the right word.
Yeah.
That if you make a bad decision on the base paths,
yeah,
if you're striking out a lot, something needs to happen.
There was no consequence for it.
Right.
And so what does that mean with Terry Francona? What, you know, and his big line is, you know, I don't think meeting a guy at the top of the dugout steps and letting him know is the right approach, but there are certain ways he does it. And I don't want to give it away because Gordon's got a good story, but he's got some good stuff in there that basically I think people will see the Tito effect and how
that's,
he does.
That's going to be the headline, I can tell, the Tito effect.
How he does go about holding players accountable. And I think just even by who he is and by the fact that he's on his way to the Hall of Fame as a manager, that he has two World Series rings and darn near got a third with the Guardians. That alone, and that was really my big takeaway from spring training, was that there was a built-in respect for him just out of the gate. That the Reds brought in a Hall of Fame manager to manage us, this core young group of team. This, so they got rid of our manager last year, and this was sort of the takeaway too that I thought was like, oh, they're serious. They fired the manager because we didn't perform, and Hunter Green alluded to this in so many words, and like, so I sense that, oh, they brought this guy in, like, they mean business, and if we don't perform now, the next person's gonna get fired might be me, the player. You know, or sent down, you know,
right,
or traded,
yeah,
or, you know,
yeah,
all right, or whatever. So, yeah.
Well, after telling us that you are all about the facts, that's a pretty, yes, vibey assessment you just
had.
Oh,
yeah, well, very vibey.
All right. Well, with that, let's keep the good vibes rolling. Excited to talk to our special guest, the Grand Marshal of the Finley Market Opening Day Parade, Chris Sabo. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and we are so excited here because we have the Grand Marshal of the Reds Opening Day Parade, none other than Reds Hall of Famer Chris Sabo. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's pretty exciting, and I'm looking forward to opening day.
So this, you know, you obviously have experienced opening day as a player. During that time, did you ever get to see the parade?
I did not. I mean, obviously, I knew of the parade. I was a big baseball historian. I mean, I knew the Reds were the first professional team, and I know opening day was very special. And, of course, I knew of the parade, but I never seen it except for, like, highlights on the TV. And I didn't even know the route. I had to look up the route this morning to see where it starts and pretty much where it ends.
What was that? How did it all come about? What was it like when you got the call? Did you have any idea that you were going to be asked to be the Grand Marshal of the great traditional Findlay Market opening day parade?
No clue. I mean, it's never really entered my mind once in my whole life. I mean, I'm 63 years old, for God's sakes. We were planning on my daughter, Annie Sabo. She does the games on TV for the Reds.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were planning to go up there at the beginning of April for a couple weeks to help her out with our granddaughter, Mia. And then the Reds called and said, would I have interest in being the opening day Grand Marshal? I said, sure. I mean, honestly, I was going to be up there anyway. And it's quite an honor. It's probably the last honor I'll get as a Red. So looking forward to it.
Well, you are, I would say you're one of the players that people know. Iconic is an overused word, but you were on the World Series team in the 90s. You had that trademark look, you know, the goggles, the hustle, you know, your style of play was beloved by Cincinnati. And so I know there's a lot of people excited to see you here. You still have legendary star status here in Cincinnati. So I can't believe it's taken this long to have you be the Grand Marshal, quite frankly. But, I know the fans are excited to see you. How often do you get back to Cincinnati and what is it like when the fans come up and want to talk about the 90s team or your career as a Red?
Oh, I still have a house up in Cincinnati. I spend most of my time down here in Florida, but my mom lives up in the house we have up there in Cincinnati. So I get up to Cincinnati quite a bit to see my mom and helping Annie out with the Reds thing. So I'm up there more than you think during the baseball season. And it's actually a nice break. I mean, I love Cincinnati. I love living there. Love raising my family there. So, I'll be up there quite a bit. I'll be up there in April, and then I'll probably be up there at least a little bit every month during the summer.
When we think of Chris Sabo, and I can remember back in the 80s, I was just starting to, I came to my first Reds game in 86, grew up in another part of Ohio, and you came up in 88, and you think Chris Sabo, the third baseman, aggressive, just the consummate hustling player, and the goggles. Can you take us back to, well, number one, I assume, maybe I shouldn't assume this, but do you still get asked about the goggles a lot?
Oh my God! I probably get asked by the goggles every day. I'm going to go play in this golf event here in a little bit, and if 10 people don't ask me about the goggles, I'll be surprised. They usually go, "Why aren't you wearing your goggles?"
And, it was sort of your brand. I mean, you were always on brand with those goggles. Now, I have to ask you this, with the changes in technology today with contact lenses and, you know, laser surgery and everything like that, if you were playing today, do you think you would be, you know, wearing the goggles? Would that be the option you choose?
I mean, I don't know. At the time, you're talking 40 years ago, the only option I had was hard lenses for contacts. And I tried them, but I slid so much head first and they'd always fall out or they get cockeyed. So, I found these, rec specs and they worked. They didn't move. They did the job. And that's why I stuck with them. But, nowadays they have they have soft contacts that sort of stick to your eyes a lot better. So maybe I would have went with contacts. I don't know.
So you're not wearing the goggles today when you hit the golf course?
I am not. I do wear contacts when I play golf, and they're actually kind of nice.
Thinking back to the 80s and when you came up with the Reds and your baseball career, it almost seems like everyone that, you know, outside of baseball that was iconic wearing those kinds of glasses were on the Los Angeles Lakers. You think about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy, Kurt Rambis. Do you remember like just the origin of when it became a thing for you? I know you just explained why you decided to wear them, but do you remember like how it kind of took on a life of its own? And were you one of the first people in baseball to wear those? I'm trying to think back of baseball players that did. I always just think of you.
I really don't know. It came about. I was in AAA baseball with the Reds. I was in a slump, and I went to an eye doctor. Never went to an eye doctor before. He said I needed glasses. I said, oh. And like I said, I tried different options, and I was in Oklahoma City, and I was in this mall. We were killing time before going to the ballpark, and we walked by a lens crafters in the mall, and there was a big advertisement for these rec specs, and it had Reggie Jackson on there. Huh. And Reggie, I loved Reggie Jackson, so evidently he wore them like during batting practice or something, and they had a big picture of him wearing these things. So I walked in there, and I go, hey, can you make me a pair of those? Back then, you could get them in an hour. So they made me a pair. I wore them that night. And I know I got laughed at and by the fans and stuff like that, Oklahoma City. But I didn't care. They worked. I could see. They didn't move on my face. And I just went with it. And, you know, after a couple months, the ridicule sort of stopped, I guess. But I never paid attention to that kind of nonsense. I was just trying to improve my performance so I would have a chance to play in the big league someday.
Well, it led to a Hall of Fame career with the Reds, for sure. You mentioned your daughter, Annie. I was going to ask you about that. Did you expect when, you know, she was a little girl at the ballpark that she would eventually work in baseball as a broadcaster?
That's funny. I have three daughters. Annie's my oldest. And she always loved sports. And she always wanted to go with me if we went to the Bengals or Cincinnati Cyclones or UC or Xavier basketball. She always wanted to go. I mean, all my daughters did. But I remember as a little kid, she said she wanted to be, she loved Aaron Andrews. And she goes, I would like to do what Aaron Andrews does. And all I said was, I go, well, it's a lot like sports. It's very competitive. It's very hard to do. And if that's something you do, follow your heart. And she did. And fortunately, she's had a fairly successful career at it so far. But I think baseball and football were her favorites. I think that's where she wanted to sort of gravitate towards.
Do you catch her on the broadcast a lot?
Oh, yeah, I get that. I get that major league package. We definitely watch her show. It's exciting, and she's not going to do as many games this year, you know, with our granddaughter. But we do it, and the granddaughter watches, and it's all good.
So fill us in on what you've been up to. I know that until a couple years ago, you've been a coach. Most recently, well, a couple years ago, you were in Ohio coaching in Akron, the Zips. What are you doing right now?
Well, you're right. When I retired, I played a lot of golf, and then I got bored of that. And then I coached with the Reds for a while, and then I coached at the IMG Academy down here in Florida. I coached their national team, which was great. Then the University of Akron wanted me to come up there and start their baseball program, which was a challenge, especially during COVID. I did that for 4 years, and then decided to retire again. And then last year, I was an assistant coach at the State College of Florida down here in Bradenton, and I ended up having to have both my shoulders operated on. So I'm sort of in a pause of coaching, and but I hope to get back to coaching here at the next cycle here at the end of the summer, because my shoulders are healing up, and I really didn't want to coach if I couldn't throw batting practice, if I couldn't hit fungos effectively. But I'm on the mend. So besides golf, I'm not doing much. But hopefully, even at my age, hopefully coaching's in my near future here in the next few months.
What drew you to coaching? What do you love about it?
I just love being in the game. I mean, it's not as fun as playing, obviously. but I enjoy the being around the kids, telling stories, giving them my bits of wisdom about how to play the game the right way.
Yep.
And I love being physical. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I didn't want to coach if I couldn't do the physical stuff, because that's as much enjoyment for me as anything. The throwing, the hitting, the moving around, I enjoy it. And let's face it, I've played baseball my whole life, and it's just good to be around it. I really get a high, I guess, out of it.
Yeah. You any advice for you? I'm sure you get asked about it. Like, what advice do you give youth coaches? You're very in tune to the game.
I go follow your heart. I mean, you can't coach everybody the same. Everyone's different. Everyone swings the bat the different. I mean, there's a few absolutes you have to do, obviously, that to be able to hit a baseball. But everyone's got their own technique. So you sort of just, you know, be yourself, work with each individual individually, and just try to get the best out of them. I mean, I can honestly say every kid I've ever worked with has gotten better. Does that mean they played in the big leagues? I've had a few that got to the big leagues, but no. But just try to get them better. And the only advice I give to the kids is play as long as you can, because eventually it doesn't matter who you are. Barry Bonds, Clemens, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, eventually they're going to take the uniform away from you as a player. So just keep going until they tell you can't play anymore. Yeah. And then when that happens, then you move on.
So
great stuff.
You've had an amazing career as a player, three-time All-Star for the National League. The percentage of baseball players that can be called a World Series champion is pretty small. So asking you this question, I know is a tough one, but with such a amazing career, can you give us one or two highlights, moments where you just, if you were to write your memoir, they would have to be there?
Well, the highlight of my career is the first game I played in the big leagues, opening day in 88. I mean, I remember telling my mom, when I grew up in the city of Detroit, I remember telling my mom when I was a youngster, 5 or 6 years old, that I was going to play for the Major League Baseball with the Detroit Tigers. And I'm going to play with Al Kaline. And Kaline was my guy. I was too young to realize he would have been retired by the time I got that age. But anyway, that was a dream. You know, I was never the biggest guy. I was very strong for my size, but I wasn't the biggest guy. In fact, I was always like the smallest guy in the Reds. But that was it. You got to understand the world's negative. So all through my life, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're not good enough. Why are you even trying that? And I always give myself credit, because I always said, no, that's what I'm going to do. You got to follow your dreams. I mean, that's the great thing about America. And so that's always the highlight for me. Opening day, I remember we were in Louisville a couple days before playing an exhibition game, and Pete Rose coming up to me and saying, hey, you made the team, and you, in fact, you're going to start on opening day because Buddy Bell was hurt. And I go, wow, thank you, Pete. It really means a lot to me. This is what I've dreamt about my whole life. And so that's obviously a giant highlight for me is that opening day. And that's one of the few games I can still remember pretty good. I mean, people ask me, I remember that first hit, but people ask me, like, my first home run, and I honestly do not remember. But I do remember my first hit, and I always say that's the highlight of my career, so far, playing in the big leagues, and obviously playing well enough to stick around for a while. But it was awesome.
So speaking of Pete, if you can believe what you read in the press, and who can, right, Jason?
Right.
I've read in multiple sources that he was the one that bestowed upon you the nickname of Spuds. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
And did you were you annoyed with it?
You guys don't know me that well. I let stuff brush off my back pretty easily. But I had nicknames in high school, had nicknames in college. most people just call me Saves. When I got to the big leagues, I mean, if you know Pete or knew Pete, he gave nicknames to everybody. That was sort of his thing. He had a good personality, always upbeat, and so he'd give everyone nicknames. And at the time, Budweiser had this commercial with this dog called Spuds McKenzie, and he was like, he'd ride surfboards, he'd do all kinds of stuff. And he told me one day during batting practice, he goes, "Saves, you look like that commercial, that dog in the commercial, Spuds McKenzie." So he started calling me Spuds McKenzie, and then everyone caught on to it. And then eventually it just got down to Spuds. And honestly, they still call me that. Actually, my granddaughter calls me Spuds. So it's just created a life of its own. And I've had it for almost 40 years. So I guess they'll probably put it on my Hall of Fame plaque. So I think it's something I just have to deal with. And honestly, most people call me Spuds. No one really calls me Chris.
Well, go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
Well, Spuds, speaking of, you still have another, we talked about the rec specs, but another thing that's iconic about your look is your flat top. Do you still have that?
Yeah, I still got, I tell people all the time, I'm 63 years old. I still got as much hair as I had when I was 23. It's really not gray. So I must have good hair genetics. So, and the barber always says, if you haven't lost it by now, you're probably not going to lose it until the very end. I go, that's great. I mean, you can't control it one way or another. So yeah, I still have a flat top and probably have to get it re-leveled here in the next couple of days before I go to opening day.
Yeah, you got to look sharp. You got to look sharp for opening day. So yeah, you are gifted. I mean, you can hit a curveball and you have a good head of hair into your 60s. I think, there is a lot of guys that would be envious of just those two things right there.
Absolutely.
I can't hit a curveball. I still got my hair, but some of it. Anyway.
Well, this is what I tell players. There's two things you got to do to play forever. The first thing you have to do is be able to field your position on a routine play, wherever you play, outfield, infield, catcher. You got to make the routine play. All the other spectacular plays are great, but if you can't field a two hopper right at you and throw the guy out, you can't play. And the only other thing you got to be able to do is hit a fastball. If you can't hit a fastball, you cannot play. No one can hit a curveball. if the pitcher throws a breaking ball the proper way, you're not going to do much damage to that. And even today, you watch the big leaguers. If a pitcher throws a breaking ball the way they're supposed to, either a slider or a curveball or a split finger, you're not going to do much damage. Now, if they hang that curveball, that's a different story. Those are the balls that get hit 450 feet, doubles, all that kind of stuff. But you got to be able to hit a fastball. So I tell kids, learn to hit the fastball, because every pitcher I ever faced, even the knuckleballers, could throw a fastball.
That's good advice right there. Hitting advice from none other than Chris Sabo. So we have to ask you now, as we look ahead to this Red season with optimism super high with Terry Francona, what are your thoughts on the Reds as we approach opening day?
Well, I'm optimistic by nature. I mean, every year I played, I thought we were going to win the World Series. So, and we only won one, which is still great.
And I haven't won one since.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I hope before I go that they win at least one or two more. But I like the Reds. I mean, but again, it's obviously a great hire with Tito. I love the Reds. But again, it's all about staying healthy. It's a very long season. And if everybody stays healthy, boom, you got a chance there to get in the playoffs. And that's all you really want to do, get in the playoffs, because once you're in there, you got a chance. So I'm bullish. I think McClain coming back is really going to help. He's always been one of my favorite players. And I think he's versatile. I think he's a good player, has good energy. I'm bullish on him. But then again, it's March. And we'll see what's going on in July. But I just pray that they're healthy And we can see, I think if they're healthy, they got a chance. That's my personal opinion, probably biased, but I would love to see the Reds win another World Series here soon.
All right. Well, Chris Sabo, I can't bring myself to call you Spuds. I'm still like, I'm going to be deferential here.
Sabes.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us ahead of your appearance as Grand Marshal in the Finley Market Opening Day Parade. As a Reds fan myself, I was excited to hear that. I know there are a ton of Reds fans that'll be pumped and psyched to see you. So, and I'm guessing because of the surgery to your shoulders, you're not going to be throwing too many things from your open convertible out to the crowd.
No, I'm feeling better. No, I'm recovering. So yeah,
that's good.
My left shoulder's worse than my right. So I think I can. I'm not gonna be able to throw hard, but I still can be able to throw something.
All right. Well, that's great. Again, congratulations. Thanks for talking to us, and we'll see you on opening day.
Yeah, make sure you stop by and say hi. I appreciate it.
All righty.
Thanks, Sabes.
All right. Have a good day.
Okay, well, there you have it. From the Grand Marshal himself, Chris Sabo, still wearing the buzz cut.
That was a lot of fun. I love the rec spec, the
rec
the
spec,
deep history of the rec specs.
Spuds. I would have thought no one would call him Spuds anymore.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, I thought he was one of the most fun players to watch. I have a lot of respect for him. I would never call him Spuds. It would be like Mr. Sabo from me.
Yeah.
So the fact that people still walk up and call him Spuds, that's pretty funny. But what a down-to-earth nice guy.
Oh, yeah. It's great that he's still really involved in the organization. And because when you think about it, especially for someone like myself who came up a Reds fan in the 80s, like he's one of those from a 80s Reds fan perspective, really mid 80s on, kind of one of those iconic figures, especially a guy who always hustled, who always played hard, who played the game the right way. Then you throw on top of that the flat top and the rec specs, and a guy who's outspoken and not afraid to, you know, just call it like he sees it and tell it like it is. I think all that kind of goes into Chris Sabo and the fact his daughter's on TV, and it's cool that they're still very involved in the organization.
I think so. I think that was a great Grand Marshal pick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to wrap things up, instead of a That's So Cincinnati moment, we're going to narrow it down to, I'm going to ask you, as a sports reporter, but also as a Reds fan, share one of your favorite Reds memories or experiences.
My first one is like sitting around the TV watching 41-92 with my parents and my brothers were little, and you know, they were in bed. At least I recall. My mom says no, they were still up or whatever. Like she nitpicked my column. This is, you know, you and I were talking yesterday about people nitpicking my column.
Your mom fact checked your column.
My mom, an English teacher, who will also nitpick my language sometimes in my column. But then how that basically set up us, because my parents weren't baseball. You know, I grew up in a small town in Southeast Ohio, and like. But that basically set up.
You grew up in a town I can't pronounce.
Gallipolis.
Gallipolis. I was going to say Gallipolis.
Some people say Gallipolis.
Gallipolis. Gallipolis.
But that moment, I think, hooked my parents into. I convinced them that we came to our first Reds game the following summer in '86, and really, that's my biggest memory. Is like we brought my cousin who. Was my best friend growing up, and I've written about her, and she's no longer with us. And it was just like going to Riverfront Stadium, and we sat, there was a little chunk of blue seats in right field. Remember those?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And we sat in those
in Riverfront. Yeah.
And we sat in the last row.
Expensive seats, the
were
blue
they?
Seats. Yeah, there's the blue, yellow, and red.
But these were that little chunk of blue in right field.
Oh, okay.
They were.
All right. Yeah.
And it was just really a short group of seats that were like kind of right behind the right fielder.
Okay.
And yeah, we sat there, and it's just funny to remember it. Like it everything felt huge. Like I remember walking across the walking bridges over what was Fort Washington Way then, and like just, you know, the big city and the massive stadium and the hotel. And we sat in the last row of that, and there maybe were 10 rows of those seats. And like, there were some fans that, had been overserved, and someone pulled the other fan's pants down. And like, but like, those are the things you remember as an 11-year-old kid. Like, you're like,
yeah,
oh my God. Like, so that was my first memory. They played the Phillies, and, Buddy Bell was, I believe, the third baseman.
That would have been right. Yeah, he played for Pete at third base.
Yeah. That was my first Reds memory.
That's amazing.
I think we came to a game every year after. Like, we did like Kings Island and the Reds game, or the
driving into the
Reds.
Big city from rural Ohio. You do Kings Island, see the Reds.
But it also puts in perspective, like, that is so many Reds fans still to this day. 100%. When you think about the caravan, like, that's what a lot of people do, like, from these small towns. When you draw 150 to 200 mile radius around the city, people from small towns come to Cincinnati to go to a Reds game or Kings Island or the zoo, or it seems like those are probably the biggest.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
We used to do the beach.
It's funny your recollection of it being enormous and big. I had the same experience. The first Major League Baseball game I went to was a Pirates game, because my dad grew up west of Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. He was sort of a Pirates fan, not a huge baseball fan. So my aunt, his sister, and me, and my dad, we go to see the Pirates play, and we walk into Three River Stadium, and I had the same reaction, like the enormity of it. It was so big, and it was also like the colors were so bright and vibrant. I think part of the reason is my dad used to watch baseball on an old black and white TV.
Yeah.
I'm dating myself a little bit, but like, we walked into Three River Stadium, and it was an evening game. And so, like, the lights were on, and that, like, you know, the weirdly bright green color of AstroTurf, I remember just being awestruck by how colorful it was. One of my favorite memories as a Reds fan just happened recently. I was in the Montgomery Inn.
Yeah.
The old school Montgomery Inn. My wife and I, like, last minute decision, we're hungry. I was like, well, let's just go to Montgomery Inn, see if we can squeeze in at the bar and get a quick bite to eat. Well, the game was on, and it was Ellie De La Cruz's first season, after he got called up to, the majors.
Yeah.
And so everybody was so excited to watch him bat. It was almost like every at bat for Pete Rose, when he was chasing Ty Cobb, like, the world stopped for a minute, and everybody had to watch his at bat. That was what was going on with Ellie De La Cruz. And so, like, I think his first at bat, like, everybody around the bar got quiet, wanted to see. I think he popped up or struck out or something. And it was that next at bat where he hit the inside the park home run.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, because, like, it was one of those shared experiences with everybody around you, mostly strangers, but you're, like, best friends at that point.
Yep.
Everybody's high-fiving each other. Did you see that? People are, like, running up to watch the replay, just watching Ellie De La Cruz hit that inside the park home run, surrounded by, like, Reds fans at the Montgomery Inn.
Yeah.
That was, like, that's so Cincinnati moment for me.
Big time.
But it was even made better because Tom Gregory was there, watched it. He was so excited, he bought the whole bar around.
As only he would do.
As only he would
Dean
do.
Dean would do that too, I think, right?
I think Dean would do that too. Dean's kind of a cheap tightwad compared to Tom. No, I'm kidding. We love Dean. He is anything but...
One of my favorite guests, too.
Oh,
he's such
guest.
A great storyteller.
He certainly is.
Yeah.
So, I've been to many Reds games and seen some great things over the years. But that moment, I won't forget, just because it was like, baseball. What else can bring a group of strangers together and have that moment that they're going to share?
And to think... everyone there has gone and told that story to someone else too.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, yeah. I remember Ellie De La Cruz, his, when he first came up, the moment he hit the inside of the park home run right after he came up. And to think, you know, that guy's on his way to stardom.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, and, people
who he think, is right now, but yeah, even like we it's have, just getting started.
Yeah, there are some, you know, people like Barry Larkin, who knows a thing or two about playing shortstop, has said that we are just seeing the beginning of what's going to be an amazing career.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, should we wrap it up, Jason?
Sounds great. This has been fun.
All right. Well, you did a great job co-hosting.
Oh, thank you.
It's like you have some experience,
thanks,
you know, behind a microphone there. And we should plug, you know, check Jason out on our friends at WLW. Are you still doing a...
yeah, still filling some, yeah.
Some, are you doing Saturday nights still?
Every once in a while.
All right. Tell DJ Hodge not to get any IDs, all right?
Oh, I will.
All right, well, thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button and see an offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.